Medical information obtained from our website or on the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If you have, or you suspect you might, have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a healthcare provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of the sports doctor, this radio show, or their sponsors.
Hey, everybody, live from Chicago. Welcome. It's the Sports Doctor. I'm Dr. Bob Weil, sports podiatrist, all things sports medicine, fitness, wellness, and life. Brought to you by Global Schoolwear, stylish school uniforms by Tommy Hilfiger, LER, Lower Extremity Review, evidence-based magazine, and UK Health Radio. We've got a great doubleheader today, neurodiversity and skydiving. That's quite a duo. Valerie Sertenerez, PhD. She's a neurodiversity sustainability leadership expert. She'll be joining me along with Melanie Curtis, who is a world pro skydiver and performance coach, keynote speaker. Then the sports doctor's in live from Norway. Valeria Sertenerez, welcome to the sports doctor.
Oh my God. Thank you so much. It's a great pleasure and honor. And thank you so much for inviting me, such a pleasure, and giving me the most precious commodity, it's your time.
Yes, plus that's so my excited. Time in my New York accent that I'm lending to you. Valerie, who speaks, I think, over a half a dozen languages and does international business. Valerie, give us some background on yourself and this neurodiversity sustainability world.
Yes, thank you. Absolutely. I'm proud Ukrainian, been living in Scandinavia for almost 20 years. I am lifelong learner and very devoted, proud mother of two adoptive kids from Ukraine, which they became beautiful princes of 17 years old. They are teaching me now everything what I believe. It was a little bit different in my age when I was raised up, and at that time it was not any kind of neurodiversity understanding, right? And for people who probably have never heard this term, so I can explain very quickly and very easily. It's biodiversity, colorful and powerful of our brains. And it's neurodiversity acknowledges the natural variations in how human brains function and process the world. This term was coined by Judy Singer in 1998, and this term challenges the traditional view that neurological differences are pathological. No.
The world of autism and the different spectrums have long been mixed in, interacted in one way or another, as compared to the high performance side of the neurodiversity, and that's a new area of interest. Like you talked about in the late 90s, but go ahead, continue to give us your definition.
Yes, thank you so much. And but instead, like you already brilliantly mentioned, that instead we can look and approach neurodiversity just through the lens of deficit or disability or disorder. Instead, we can frame these differences as valid and valuable expression of human diversity. It can be really superpowers, but still, neurodiversity is one of the most misunderstood and misinterpreted superpowers and leadership assets today.
You throw and another word in there, you know, when you're a sustainability expert, that's another magic word that you could talk about all day. Again, when you're coming in and dealing with, again, performance, whether it's in sports or whether it's in life, whether it's in business, again, we're talking about, how do we enhance these particular conditions when we're challenged so dramatically between social media, the pandemic, this threw everything in such a mixture. How do you find that the medical and establishment is tuning in to these kinds of definitions of neurodiversity and sustainability?
Yes, thank you so much. Actually, sustainability It is my great passion as well. It's about long-term serve for the community and sustainability. I'm approaching from the angle of triple bottom line. It's not just environmental aspect or domain. It's a holistic approach between environmental, economical, and social. And here we are talking about social or human sustainability, where we can refer to neurodiversity. And yes, it's through medical language still approach neurodiversity very radically. And you know, the narrative, how we talk about those people, and actually about myself, I'm neurodivergent, it's a huge difference when we can change the global narrative about neurodiversity. And I want to be the cause. It is my big cause. I want really to approach it. It's a different ways of thinking. It's not a weakness, and it's untapped capability.
Well, that's
which
a major
is really
point. Yes, that's a major, major point, is that it's not a point of weakness. I mean, I know you're the creator of the five enablers method. You talk about, you know, evolving and evaluation, enhancing and power. And again, these are all very, very positive. And I include all of this, Valeria, in what I call the mental game. I'm a sports doctor, whether I'm dealing with psychologists or psychiatrists. 3 months ago, I had from the Netherlands on a Tao expert talking about 2,500-year-old principles that were as relevant today in sports and in life as they were, you know, thousands of years ago. So I think the big point of the fact that this is not necessarily a negativity, although neurodiversity would include some of these challenges also. Is that true?
Yes, absolutely. And my mantra, I'm talking, it's not a weakness, it's cognitive uniqueness. It's not disability, but it's plus ability or possibility. And it's not a weakness, but it's really uniqueness. And not disorder, but disordered. It's different order. But to convert it to sustainable competitive advantage, we have to approach it really proactively and manage. It's not just to raise awareness, but actually how we can harness and leverage the superpowers that are there or neurodivergent.
Well, today, as you know, with some of our colleagues and in that one group, which we're talking about the world of health and wellness, we're talking anti-aging, we're talking functional medicine. And again, for the sports doctor, over the decades, when I used to talk about so-called alternative medicine, it was this or that, Eastern, Western. And then my namesake, Dr. Andrew Weil, said, hey, let's call it complementary, where we could include all of it. And again, the positive side of things, I think, is the big news. What's the best site people could go to find out about you and your work?
Thank you so much. I'm really great and honored that you have invited me, and I'm talking very passionately about neurodiversity leadership. It's really how people and organization can harness, leverage, and benefit from neurodiversity and from different cognitive perspective, mental uniqueness.
How do they
and
find
you? Find
what's the
on
best
Instagram,
website?
They can find me on Instagram. It's Mrs. Wolken Geniality or Valeria Jasnes. And also, please find me both on Facebook and LinkedIn, the same Valeria Jasnes. I will be more than happy to be reach out and we can elevate this topic further. It would be my honor.
How do you find, again, the psychology community, the medical community, the pediatric community? After all, you've been involved in international cultures, international rules and regulations, and that's why I have to ask you how your sports psychology skills are. Are you a sports mom, Valeria? Are you a sports mom with your kids?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And, you know, in Norway, we have all the time outside, and, like, there is almost no day without hiking, and there is no bad weather, just adjustable clothes. We are so fresh air people. And, that's absolutely how we establish connection with the nature. And that's why I'm teaching my kids and everybody that all the answers are already there laying in biodiversity. It's exactly the same as neurodiversity. If you really understand that in biodiversity, everything is so interconnected. And it is about not just surviving, but thriving in togetherness and collaboration. It's the same what we should learn from biodiversity and nature.
Yes, and I characterize and use a lot, Valeria, the term, the new medicine. And it's very, very simple, the new medicine. Number one is eat smarter. And we can talk all day about that. Nutrition is such a big deal. Number two is keep moving. Million choices. You want to hike, you want to ski, you want to work out at the gym, you want to do yoga, a lot of choices. And number three, again, we're also talking about, which is reducing stress. And that's before we mentioned politics. You know, there's so much stress, there's so much volatility. And so this is where the new medicine, we're trying to pay attention to these basics. And you know, the United States, we have a lot of problems with our particular healthcare, where healthcare is not guaranteed. It's something I just don't know why we don't get it. When you've seen that in so many other cultures, wouldn't you agree?
Yes, absolutely. I agree. We should approach from holistic approach, and the health also, of course, it's the combination and unity in between. Our body, mind, and our brain, right? We should always remember they are so interconnected, and we should care about them from the holistic perspective. What we care so much what we put in our belly and our stomach, but we have radically also to be approachable and demanded what kind of food we put in our brain. I mean, kind of information.
Yes. And do you work with countries, organizations, clubs, park districts, whatever? Who comprises your target audience? Business?
Yes, I'm co-founder of Your Neuro Edge, Your Neurodiversity Edge program. When we have products, it's five programs about neurodiversity leadership for corporates, for academia, for individuals, for parents who have neurodivergent kids, and for Ukrainian people with PTSD. So because I'm proud Ukrainian, and a lot of trades between all of them, or all of us, actually, it's at the end of the day about regulating your nervous system from holistic approach.
Well, this like is something I think that we're trying to learn here, you know, again, in the United States, where you can't watch TV for 2 minutes without a drug commercial or a diet commercial. And I think we're trying real hard to try to include a lot of these pro-lifestyle, I call it lifestyle medicine, which includes all these things, you know, that we're talking about. We're plagued with the diabetes and obesity epidemic around the world, and here in the United States. We're trying to really do something about it by having these kids, the earlier the better, paying attention to these kinds of rules. I would imagine the age groups that you work with are 3 to 103?
I try to raise awareness and consciousness. Everything at the end of the day about our unconscious choices, right? And I'm trying to talk to my kids also that every single decision should be really, really conscious choice, and it should be sustainable. And sustainable from the perspective that actually sustainability is responsibility. And everything what you're doing, even small steps, you can really put through the filter of consciousness, or actually responsibility toward yourself, toward what you're eating, what you're wearing, what kind of decision and awareness you're spreading by your behavior. So this is the most important, what you can do. Because if one person can say, what can I do? Like we're 8 billion people. No, it starts from your decisions, your choices. Like, you know, our thoughts and our decisions. We have like, say, 60,000 choices and thoughts per day. And can you imagine even 1% we put them like through the filter of consciousness or responsibility, which is sustainability, then we can totally change the world in togetherness. And we can talk.
Well, again, when you come from an intercultural world like you do, you work with so many different countries and different languages and all of these things. And it's great to hear, again, that some of the basic principles that a lot of us are trying to include in our lives, the big word include, these are the things that internationally You know, we're in the middle of the World Cup. There was the Olympics. This is sometimes where you really feel we have an opportunity in between all the chaos to try to get there. Who knows what you're dealing with your Ukraine background. It's just unbelievable. So people could find you on LinkedIn. Would they go? Would they need to spell your last name? They would find you on LinkedIn, Valeria. Where else? Are you any other website identifications?
Yes, LinkedIn is my second name. It's also a website of the new project I'm launching. It's yourneuroedge.com.
Yeah. What is that again?
It's a new. It's yourneuroedge.com.
Yourneuedge.com. Valeria.
No, your neuroedge from like neurodiversity. Just first part. Your neuroedge.
Ah, got it. Well, I want to thank you so much for great information. You're on my roster. So for some future time, I want to thank you again, Valeria Sertaneris, a PhD. And hold on, Valeria. We'll be right back, everybody. Sports Doctor. Hold on. Hey, everybody, it's Dr. Bob Weil, a sports doctor. I'm excited to announce the release of my new book, co-written with Sharky Zartman, hashtag HeySportsParents, an essential guide for any parent with a child in sports. You know, Sharky is a former Hall of Fame volleyball player. She's the mom of two daughters who became Division I volleyball players. Together, we have over 70 years of combined youth sports experience. The goal of the book? Give you the essential tools and guidance to make your experience as a sports parent the best it could be. Hashtag Hey Sports Parents is divided into four sections. The first section, Sports Parenting 101. Sharky talks everything about parenting, about coaching, that whole interaction between parents and coaches, coaching your own kid. What are the things to really pay attention to? The second section is the Sports Doctor's In, yours truly. My discussion of injury prevention and treatment, choosing the best shoes, youth sports and drugs, essential exercises, the dilemma of youth football, orthotics. Third section, experts speak out. We bring together eight different experts in nutrition and sports performance and mental training in all aspects of coaching in that section. The last section is the parents' perspective, some insights from about a half a dozen parents of athletes. So everyone, hey, get out your megaphone, spread the word. Now available on Amazon. Order now. You'll be more confident. So will your young athlete. Hashtag, hey sports parents. Hey everybody, Dr. Bob here. LER, Lower Extremity Review Magazine, is celebrating their 10th anniversary. It's been a decade of providing key clinical and practical information about concerns, conditions, and treatment solutions for the lower extremity, both sports and non-sports alike. LER is the only multidisciplinary publication for doctors of all specialties, educators, therapists, and trainers. They inform practitioners on current developments in the diagnosis, treatment, and prevention of lower extremity injuries. LER prides itself on editorial integrity and evidence-based content. Their tagline, collaborative care for better outcomes, says it all. Hey, colleagues, go to lermagazine.com. Hey, it's Dr. Bob. School Uniforms by Tommy Hilfiger is setting a new standard within the school uniform market. More schools are understanding the value that uniforms provide, school pride and identification being one of them. Another is the well-recognized reduction of student pressure to keep up with classmates in the real world of what to wear each day to school. School Uniforms by Tommy Hilfiger provides amazing quality and value to its partner schools and families. It is truly the first brand in this market that students are excited about wearing. Go to the website. globalschoolwear.com. schoolwear.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Live from Chicago. It's the Sports Doctor. I'm Dr. Bob Weil. I want to welcome Melanie Curtis. She's a pro world skydiver. She's a performance coach. She's a keynote speaker. Melanie Curtis, so welcome to the Sports Doctor.
Dr. Bob, I'm so thrilled to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, you know, we feature sometimes some of the best athletes in the world, maybe their parents and or their coaches. And we can imagine the kind of training you must do in order to be a pro skydiver. I wasn't even sure that you were pros compared to amateurs. But give us some background on yourself and the wild world of skydiving, let alone performance coaching.
Well, you know, just like anything else, skydiving, it looks like it's just a one-off thing. Like you can, you know, jump out of an airplane. It's kind of like a thrill ride, but it also is a sport and a really immersive community and activity that you can take as far as you want to take it. I was grateful, honestly enough, to find skydiving at a really young age. I did my first jump when I was 18, and I just immediately just had a fundamental shift in my psyche and was wildly, passionately driven toward the sport.
You know, when you're talking about body control, stability, landing stability, all these kinds of things, were you flying somewhere over the July 4th, 250th anniversary weekend? Was that you?
No, I wasn't. But some of my friends were,
So the skydiving, the pro skydiving, for example, you know, how many events and what's that life like as far as do they have a circuit? Is there a season? Tell us a little bit about pro skydiving.
Yeah, absolutely. Pro skydiving can look a lot of different ways. I'm actually mostly retired from pro skydiving now, which is great. I've dovetailed my experience at the world level. Obviously, you mentioned I'm a world record holder. I've done lots of different demonstration skydives into large stadiums. I've jumped into Dodger Stadium and, you know, Lumen Field in Seattle, this NFL stadiums. I've jumped into, you know, the Bronx in New York City. I've done a
All right, I'm from
like
the
that.
Bronx. In case you didn't know my New York accent, catch that into the Bronx.
I love it. New York is my city. I'm with you there. So that, as well as traveling around the globe and being sort of a headlining coach to work at events and help experienced skydivers learn how to fly their bodies, how to jump out of certain aircraft, all that stuff. But I'm also a life coach, like a peak performance coach.
Well, you would think that an area like yours, and again, when we have anybody who's excelled at anything, especially in the world of sports, I was just watching the five-hour tennis match with Novak Djokovic. It definitely got a big edge up when it comes to the mental game, as I call it.
Yeah.
All the challenges that go into being the best, whether you're talking to a business group or whether you're in the locker room.
That's right.
A particular team. And again, that gives you a definite, you know, tremendous advantage. As far as somebody accepting that type of expertise, because you know what's going on today. Everybody's an expert, Melanie. Everybody's a biohacker and an expert. and we've got to be very careful with all this misinformation in many instances that goes on. But when you're involved again in the performance side and the keynote speaking side, these kinds of things, I got to ask you, you know, how your sports psychology skills are.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's a huge part of it. That's a huge part of how I coach people now is, yes, I definitely still coach people in the sport of skydiving. I just coach them now on that mental side, you know, on dealing with fear. How much discomfort can they withstand? What are their actual values such that they are making the decisions that are aligned for them, both in sport and in life and in business and all the things that go along with being a person who likes to play at the far edges of things?
I would include that in the far edges, I would think, in many, many ways. What are some of the, in general, for instance, male versus female and age type groups that comprise the world of skydiving?
Yeah, good question. Skydiving is a highly male-dominated sport. I think it's born and just derived from aviation, which is also highly male-dominated.
Right, parachute jumping?
Yeah, skydiving, parachuting. What's interesting and I think notable about skydiving is that when you look at the physical flying, like you can see people flying in wind tunnels, right? You can stand next to the glass and watch them push air around and fly and flip and do all the things. Women and men, there's really no distinction between genders, among genders in the sport of skydiving. Like you can absolutely be, you know, a woman and be the best in the world. It's not one of those things where, if men are stronger or whatever in this capacity, they're definitely going to be better at this sport. That doesn't really exist in skydiving. And that's a really cool part of our sport, I think, as well.
You know, I was reading an article last week. I saw somebody, they were 93 years old. It was part of their bucket list. What kind of age groups do you see, including the occasional extreme individual like this lady, involved in the world of and skydiving? Again, when people go skydiving, between the pros and whatever, it's a whole different world, right?
Say that again?
The difference between, what are the age groups that you see?
Oh, you know, it's all across the board. Like there are, you can skydive as long as you are being mindful about how you engage in the sport, what you're doing, and the kind of gear that you are jumping, right? So you can land really, really softly under large parachutes. I mean, always, just like anything else, you can always make a mistake and get injured or have something bad happen. But if you make smart, conservative choices, you can skydive for a really, really long time.
Is skydiving always have parachutes? Yeah. What about all the super gliding where you see people jumping off mountains and they're flying?
Right.
Is that considered skydiving?
Yeah, so no, it's not. So I've flown a wingsuit. You see those squirrel suits. I've flown those out of airplanes. Right. So jumping out of airplanes is different than jumping off of cliffs or bridges or antenna or that type of stuff. Right. That stuff is called base jumping. And you usually only have one parachute and it's much, much closer to the ground. And so the distinction there is that base jumping is wildly more risky than skydiving because you're close to the ground. You're close to these objects that you jump off of. And so, yeah, that's outside of my risk tolerance. I have never base jumped, and I don't want to because of that reason.
I hear you. Yes.
Yeah.
What's the best place? Where can people find out about you, your work, your speaking? What's a good place?
Yeah, thank you.
Website?
Yeah, absolutely. I am melaniecurtis.com. That's M-E-L-A-N-I-E, Curtis, C-U-R-T-I-S.com. And I do a lot of comedy and nonsense, and I add a lot of value to
Instagram. I was just going to ask you that. Where do you you mix in some comedy? Did you mention the word nonsense? Content creator?
You know,
how does that work in?
The thing is, Dr. Bob, is that in my experience, and this goes across the board with all the skydiving competition, world record stuff I've done, all the coaching I've done at high levels for other people trying
to
achieve.
You had a sense of humor. You had a sense of humor through it all.
You cannot sustainably perform at those intense peak states and in those peak intense environments without like taking the steam out of the pot, man. Like you gotta just have some moments where you're
saw therapy dogs. You know, I've had therapy dog individuals on over the years, not only talking about what they would be doing in hospital settings and sickness. We were talking about the group that brought pets into the Notre Dame locker room for people to relax.
I think they let off
some steam in some way, shape, or form. And they always say laughter is some of the best way to do it. And that you people must get, people can get that real quick, I would think. Do you do any stand-up, Melanie?
Well, believe it or not, so I do a lot of Instagram comedy. So if people want to follow me
there,
Melanie Curtis 11 is what I am on Instagram. But it's one of those things that I've been interested in comedy. I taught a class years ago, comedy as a key skill in life and business, just because it's such an important element that people just tend to be framed around the idea that if you are laughing or having fun, you're somehow not serious about your goals. And that is just not true. They are not mutually exclusive.
That's an excellent point. Yeah, I grew up one town away from the Seinfelds. His father, who sold signs, I don't think we bought one. But at the same time, that relevance of whether it's letting off steam, whether it's the fact that it's not like someone's a clown, to be a very, very positive part of, like when you said the term performance coaching, then that's really an important inclusion, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and think about it. Anything that a poison is only based on dose. So if we think about anything that we put into the equation of our lives, if we overdose and we only make jokes about stuff, then that's not going to work. But if we never make jokes about stuff, you know, that also is kind of overdoing. You know what I mean? So it's the idea of like considering what the dosage is of these elements, these tools that we build, these skills that we build, and how they support how we're going to perform at these sort of peak outlier places.
When you're talking about a skydiving competing, record, et cetera, what are the criteria? Is it the speed? Is it the creativity? What is going into grading somebody in the world of skydiving?
Yeah, and it varies. There are, just like any other kind of, not just like any other sport, but in skydiving and
in general, give us some examples.
Yeah, we have a lot of different disciplines. So you mentioned the squirrel suits, you know, the world records that I'm a part of. I am a part of the largest all-female vertical world record, meaning we are jumping out of 5 different aircraft in formation, 100 women going upside down, flying upside down on our heads, going 200 miles per hour. Now, in order for that to be a record, we have to build a predetermined formation that is expressly stated on the ground before we go up. So that's
a fast break, and I'm going to keep that in mind. I got to ask you about the 200 miles an hour. We're talking with world record holder skydiver Melanie Curtis. It's the Sports Doctor. We'll be right back.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hey, we're back. 200 miles an hour. We're landing. Woo! That was fast. With Melanie Curtis. She's a world record holding skydiver, performance coach, speaker, and deals with some comedy content. So you were talking about your world record. You were explaining kind of what it was, and then we had the break. But I heard 200 miles an hour. Could you tell us about that world record activity, what's involved again? Besides, you jumped out of a plane?
Yeah, this is of the footage from my world records. It's the vehicle that I use for my keynote speeches, talking about accessing the far reaches of our potential. It's just such a mind-boggling visual. But really what it functionally is flying upside down on your head with your arms and legs in the air, you know, subtly, and you're going 200 miles an hour upside down, but you're able to control yourself, but it's very, very fast. So you have to learn the skill of what is that flight position, and then how do I go in and get on the proper level, and how do I grab a grip that is my job to grab in the world record. Does that make sense?
Yeah, what kind of time is involved between when you jump and when you land?
Is
it a minute and a half? Is it, what's the time, roughly?
Yeah, so on a world record, we have to exit higher because we need more time. We're exiting at 20,000 feet, and we're breathing supplemental oxygen from 11,000 feet up because
how
we're saturating
our
system.
How fast are you going in the plane at 20,000 feet?
I mean, they're just carrying us like cargo up to the exit point. So it's just a ride to the top. You know what I mean? So it's pretty slow.
Yeah.
So as we're going up, there are five planes flying in formation. So they're climbing together sort of in formation loosely. And then we're breathing supplemental oxygen to saturate our blood, because when the green light comes on and the door opens and it's time to exit, we basically put our oxygen tube down. The oxygen is in the aircraft. We put our oxygen tube down, and then we essentially free fall for the next, 20 seconds, getting into more oxygen-rich air, at which point we continue to free fall through the rest of the skydive, but we're now back in more normal oxygen-rich air, so it's all good. So we really just need to care for that top end. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, okay, 20 seconds of free fall. How much time before you land?
So the free fall itself of the entire world record, it depends on where you are. Like, for example, my position was on the outer edge. I was one of the last people to dock on the formation, to grab my grip on the formation. And so I need to leave first. So I basically leave the formation at like 7,500 feet, and I deploy my parachute around 6,000 feet. And that means I'm going to be under my parachute a lot longer than people who have free fallen to the lower altitudes and are deploying their parachutes around 3,000 feet. So
How fast are you going when you land? I mean, it always looks like people land, pretty aggressively. So
yeah,
I would imagine
you
got to work
on
that stability, don't you?
Yeah. Like, I'm a pro, so I have a pretty small parachute. So I'm, going pretty fast when I land. And then there are other people that are maybe less experienced that fly those, larger parachutes that are slower. And that's what you want when you're growing in skill in the sport of skydiving, is you want to be able to make smart choices in these situations. So a newer jumper with less experience wants to fly something slower. So it depends on the jumper.
Right. What kind of shoes are you in when you're doing this activity?
Yeah, I'm just wearing some running shoes. A lot of people wear Vans, it's personal preference. Doesn't really matter.
I have a pearl to, of course, you're retired. A pearl for you and your associates. Make sure they're in a multi-directional shoe. Running shoes are made running shoes are made for one foot in front of the other. A trail shoe, then you're in a shoe that's got stability both ways, and we might see that makes an awful lot of sense when we're talking about serious athletes and making sure that they're in the, when you're in your Vans, I say you're nuts, man. You got to be a good multi-direction, like a cross trainer shoe. Any of the good brands would be is my pearl for the day for you guys.
I'll take it. I'll pass it along.
I would imagine, again, the training, right? When you're talking the pro circuit, I'm sure training as an athlete was serious business with you guys.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you don't even get invited on world records unless you have, thousands of jumps and tons of experience, There are definitely people who have maybe thousands of hours or hundreds of hours flying in the wind tunnel, so they have a lot of free fall experience and they're capable of being a part of these jumps with fewer actual skydives under their belt. But for the most part, you have to have an extreme level of skill to even be invited to participate in the record attempt, right? So that's just a big deal. The pro circuit of like coaching around the world, that you don't have to be as experienced to do that, meaning you don't have to be as, quote, good. Like, you don't have to be world record level skill, but you have to be skilled enough to care for organizing your group in such a way that they're safe. You're able to place different participants who are maybe less experienced in a place where you know they're going to be able to both either do it as best of their ability and also keep the entire group safe. So there's a lot that goes into it on top of the social dynamics of including people and making them feel welcome and having fun and educating along the way.
Yes. And I would imagine, too, you know, body control and upper body yes. strength. When you're dealing with all of that situation, you better be in shape before you even start looking at something like skydiving, when you would think would be involved. Because I would imagine, again, that upper body and all sorts of body control might have a lot to do with maybe how fast you're falling or how soft you land.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. You know, you don't have to be in great shape to go skydiving. You have to be
right.
under a certain weight to do a tandem jump based on the weight requirements for the gear. So that's the threshold, really. I think it's, you know, I don't actually know the numbers, but it's relative to the gear. And you'd ask the drop zone that you go to that you're going to do a tandem skydive at. But yeah, it's better, just like any other sport, and this is my opinion, it is better when you are in better shape. You can push air, you can pull your toggles down, flying your parachute, like you just have more control, which gives you access to, I think, a higher level of safety when you're participating in the sport. So I advocate for being in better health, being in better shape to skydive, even though you don't need to be to participate at the basic levels.
I was wondering, I have to ask, I knew we'd run out of time with you, whether that's ever going to be an Olympic sport. Give us, Melanie, again, the site people could find out about you, your keynote speaking, and you and your work.
Yes, thank you. MelanieCurtis.com is my website. I welcome it. Anyone wants to reach out personally, my email is mel@MelanieCurtis.com, and my Instagram is MelanieCurtis11.
And that's with a sense of humor, right?
Yes, with a sense of humor, my friend.
All right. Hold on, Melanie. Everybody will be back with the Sports Doctors In segment. Thanks, Melanie. Hold on. We'll be right back, everybody, to Sports Doctors.
If you live in or near Aurora, Illinois, and you're into sports, fitness at any level, or your son and daughter is, you cannot forget about your feet. Your feet affect everywhere else. There are complex motions that come into play, especially in sports. Your ankles, knees, hips, and back all are affected with your foot mechanics. Come visit the office, Dr. Bob, and get evaluated. Check what shoes are best for you. I offer prescription orthotics, which is usually one of the major tools for treatment and prevention of foot-related ankle and leg problems. Also, enhancing performance. Step or two quicker. Call 630-898-3505 or go to sportsdoctorradio.com.
Hey everybody, Dr. Bob here. LER, Lower Extremity Review Magazine, is celebrating their 10th anniversary. It's been a decade of providing key clinical and practical information about concerns, conditions, and treatment solutions for the lower extremity, both sports and non-sports alike. LER is the only multidisciplinary publication for doctors of all specialties, educators, therapists, and trainers. They inform practitioners on current developments in the diagnosis, treatment, and prevention of lower extremity injuries. LER prides itself on editorial integrity and evidence-based content. Their tagline, collaborative care for better outcomes, says it all. Hey, colleagues, go to lermagazine.com. Hey, circling back. Welcome, everybody. It's the Sports Doctors In segment, where we preview some upcoming guests and topics We add a little Dr. Bob wisdom, answer a few emails if we can. A couple of longtime colleagues of mine, individuals, we used to call them Bob Guida individuals, David Buchanan, Mike Andrews will be joining me next week. Both of them go way back in working with some of the different athletes and teams. Andrews worked with the Blackhawks, Buchanan with Jim McMahon and the Bears and both these guys. Mike Andrews and I go way back in the world of figure skating. So it's going to be a tribute to their history, all of our history, with the late, great sports therapist Bob Guida. The following week, Nicole Rakowski, former IFBB bodybuilding champion, advocate of all things health and wellness, will be joining me. And then Nathan Crane, again, in the world of the mental game, in the world of spirituality, it's an important aspect in all areas of sports medicine, health and wellness, will be joining us. A little bit, hey, the World Cup. It's unbelievable sometimes in the United States as we watch this explosion of interest in soccer. You know, the World Cup is watched by like 4 or 5 billion people. The Super Bowl is a couple of hundred million, I think. Sometimes us Americans, we don't understand what a big deal it is. The American men, they really did well, but they got beat. And before the quarterfinals, it's exciting stuff. And soccer, interestingly enough, most of us, when we have kids, they play soccer. And over the decades, it was always an interesting question as to how come in the professional side of things, it wasn't anywhere near what it was internationally compared to it being so popular with kids. And I think we're seeing that change as we go along. You know, of course, the American women have been World Cup, Gold Cup champions on a few different times. Men are trying to catch up. Everybody, if you want to send an email with a question, drrwildsportsdoctor@yahoo.com. You want to go to the website, find out about the National Fitness Hall of Fame, find out about the book, hashtag Hey Sports Parents. Go to thesportsdoctorradio.com. I want to give a shout out to our friends at That One, one of the country's leading podcast and branding groups. Matter of fact, both my guests today are members of That One. And a shout out again, Sean Swarner. He might still be standing on Mount Kilimanjaro. He was a guest of mine a few months ago. Man has one lung, and he's a mountain climber, and he brought with him a cape with the names of who knows how many cancer survivors, people who were afflicted with cancer. So just a tremendous thing he's doing, and we wanted to give him a shout-out. We continue the work of All Hands and Feet on Deck, which is our effort to make a difference in the explosion of juvenile type 2 diabetes. Again, we tell everybody that the problem of youth diabetes hardly existed decades ago. As a matter of fact, type 2 diabetes was called adult onset, had to do with lifestyle and nutrition and obesity. And all of a sudden, in the past couple of decades, we've seen an explosion of adolescents. You know, whether it's social media, whether it's fast food, but the childhood obesity, all topics that we feature on the Sports Doctor. We are trying to bring together so many different experts. The founder of LEAP, Lower Extremity Amputation Prevention, Dr. Larry Rubin, was one of my professors in medical podiatry school. 15 years ago, he started LEAP. And making a big deal out of the fact that diabetic amputations, 80% of them were preventable, to try to get foot screenings involved. Dr. David Armstrong, one of the podiatry superstars in wound healing,
Low Extremity Review Magazine, Rich Dubin, the publisher, January Schulf, who is their editor, again, very involved in us putting together a mastermind, a series of articles involving, again, all hands, general doctors, podiatrists, optometrists, vascular people, paying much more attention to early education and information regarding proper nutrition and activity and exercise for these kids. Activity and exercise. The kids who are active, kids who are of a normal weight, sensible diet, juvenile diabetes is a very, very low percentage. As we get into the lifestyle-oriented, childhood obesity, terrible physical fitness habits. You know, by the time kids are in junior high school, maybe one out of 20 is on a team. What's everybody else doing? They're looking at their phones. So these organizations that are trying to pay attention, we want to get about as much help as we can, and we'll be talking more and more about different bylines and different participants in this all hands and feet on deck. The idea of podiatry really spearheading the effort, along with Lower Extremity Review, one of our sponsors' magazines, in awareness, the importance of early foot screening is something that many people don't understand or realize, that podiatry forever has been one of the first professions to be suspicious of diabetes. Someone comes in, their feet are numb, their feet are burning, something's not healing. And the foot wound world is huge, big problem. This is one of the main areas that Dr. David Armstrong and his groups, the man lectures all over the world. So keep your eyes open with that, everybody. And we will see you all next week. Thank you to our guests, our friends at BBS Radio. See you, everybody. Sports Doctor.